Los Angeles, online at kpfk.org.
It's extremely important to have public stations like KPFK that are not controlled by corporations and have an independent voice. You feel like you're listening to the voice of reason when you're going through the dial and hearing just a bunch of noise and advertisements, and you find these little oases of sanity in the midst of all the noise. Woo!
Welcome to Gray Zone Radio. In this episode, we're going to be listening to a portion of last week's live stream in which Max Blumenthal and Aaron Mate covered the global explosion of outrage in response to Israel's rising atrocities against the Gaza Strip and the threat it poses to American Imperium. To watch the full live stream, you can follow us on YouTube. You can find that link at thegrayzone.com. That's thegrayzone.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Telegram. You can also subscribe to the Max Blumenthal podcast on all podcast platforms, and you'll find the full audio there. Thanks for joining us. Now let's take a listen to this week's episode.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us. We're in unprecedented times. I can't recall in my lifetime a situation as troubling as this. Obviously atrocities happen all the time, but right now we're dealing with an Israeli government that is openly flaunting its atrocities, including violating every supposed sacred red line when it comes to the laws of war, openly announcing the intent to bomb hospitals, and then when it does bomb hospitals, putting out demonstrably fake evidence, as it did the other day with that alleged audio intercept of two Palestinian militants that by all accounts is a complete fabrication. And you have the Biden administration applauding all of this, cheering all of this on. Biden gives this unhinged speech last night we're going to talk about. But Max, I can't recall a speech that demented in U.S. history. Maybe my memory is short, but somehow linking the proxy war in Ukraine to now backing Israel's massacres in Gaza and pretending as if he's on the side of human rights and having the gall to claim that he cares about Palestinians and speaking out against bigotry, which he encouraged openly by, for example, repeating the lie about beheaded Palestinian babies, which then was part of the climate that led to that gruesome murder of the six-year-old Palestinian boy in Chicago. And then Biden goes out and pretends as if he cares about Palestinian life. So anyway, we're going to get into all this. But
yeah, he says his name. He's like, his name was Wadia. I thought it was important for me to watch Blinken's appearance at the State Department. It was supposed to be a briefing by Matthew Miller at 1:00, but then there was a release of two American hostages from Chicago. They were released by Hamas through negotiations with Qatar. Blinken wanted to announce that as kind of a diplomatic win, although the U.S. is doing everything possible to prevent the captives from being released. And then Blinken proceeded to repeat that everyone in Gaza are human shields. He was asked, is Israel actually obeying the law of war, laws of war? And that what separates Israel and the U.S. from barbarians like Hamas is that they believe in democracy and the rule of war. So just more green lighting of this a hideous blitzkrieg as Israel seems to be preparing some kind of ground invasion. There are some sources murmuring that the Biden administration is trying to delay a U.S. assault of the Gaza Strip. We heard Biden's speech that Aaron mentioned where he tied Ukraine to dead Israeli children, alluding to the beheaded babies that did not exist. I'll have a piece coming out on another source that's been manipulating Biden from within the Israeli prime minister's office. It's a very interesting one who fed him those photos that didn't exist. And so Biden is basically telling the Republicans in the Freedom Caucus and Senate Republicans like J.D. Vance, who've opposed Ukraine aid, that if you don't send Zelensky your billions, you are an anti-Semite terror simp. That's basically the message. And we'll go through Biden's speech later. I think it's important to get some updates from the ground, Aaron. We We have Israel basically telling people to leave the largest hospital, or one of the largest hospitals in Gaza City, Al-Quds Hospital. This is an urgent appeal from the Palestinian Red Crescent Society. Palestinian Red Crescent Society faces an imminent threat. The Israeli occupation forces demand the evacuation of Al-Quds. There are 12,000 displaced civilians inside. They're calling on the international community to avert another catastrophe like the one at Al-Ahli Hospital, where anywhere from 100 to 500 civilians were killed in a strike that Biden blamed on Palestinian armed factions. And here is what it looks like inside Al-Quds Hospital today. These are some of the 12,000 living there. And basically, Israel is going to send them out into the street. Many of them have already had their homes destroyed. Send them to nowhere, where they will then be bombed again with its forces poised to enter, which everyone agrees will be a complete bloodbath. We've seen several of our contacts have their homes bombed, have their neighbors killed in the past 48 hours. I also received from a source in Gaza a message that's being sent out to UNRWA from the Israeli army. So UNRWA is the UN Relief Works Agency that maintains the schools in the Gaza Strip. They are responsible for the welfare of over 70% of people in Gaza who are refugees. Sorry, it's the they were set up in 1950 to care for Palestinian refugees. And here is the message sent to their schools, in which thousands of civilians are sheltering. You are ordered to leave five schools inside Gaza City. Residents of Gaza City and all its neighborhoods, the Israeli army has pleaded with you several times to evacuate to the south of the Gaza Strip, including the shelters and schools. And you have not done so. To all people staying in at the northern Rimal area, especially those in the following schools, they're told to leave.
And Max, you were in Gaza during the 2014 Israeli assault. How vital were these schools, these UNRWA schools, in sheltering people, protecting them from Israeli bombardment?
Well, it was a scandal that Israel began bombing those schools during its operation. And what I understood is just a larger point about Gaza and how the Israeli military operates. You can't understand the scale of destruction unless you're inside and you just drive and see kilometer after kilometer of decimation. And 2014 everyone thought that was shocking, but now what we're seeing is on an entirely different scale, where something like 600 children were killed in the entire 51-day assault on Gaza in 2014. Now the number is, I think it's edging past 1,500 in just over 10 or 12 days. So Israel has the entire population registry of the Gaza Strip in its possession, including where people live. It also has a vast informant network that it gathers through manipulation, blackmail, and the incentivizing work permits. And it asks people to snitch on their neighbors. Who's with Hamas? Anyone who it considers a Hamas family is someone who might have a member of the largest political faction in the Gaza Strip in its home. And that could be someone who's working a managerial position in one of the ministries, even the health ministry. It's not necessarily an Al-Qassam fighter. And then they will target that entire home based on the presence of someone who has some affiliation with Hamas there. And then they just target homes of people who have no affiliation with Hamas, like in 2014, at the end of the assault in one final blow, they took down the Zafar One Tower, which was mostly Fatah supporters and former employees of the Palestinian Authority who opposed Hamas. And it's just basically a way of saying, well, you didn't rise up against them, so you're targets too. My point is, all these homes, when you see them being struck and they're saying we're hitting Hamas targets, they're hitting entire families. They know it. They're down with it. And it's because somebody has a political affiliation they don't like. This is what the Israeli sociologist Baruch Kimmerling called politicide. So that's how we should see what's going on. But now what they're doing is they're evacuating the entire northern area of the Gaza Strip. The Jabalia refugee camp, which is the first refugee camp in the north, has been obliterated. And below it is Gaza City. And you have the Al Rimal area, which is the central area in Gaza City with a lot of administrative offices, as well as cafes and cultural attractions. It's obliterated. And that's where Israel plans to send its ground forces in. They have announced a three-prong operation or a three-level operation. One is to eliminate the military and capacity of Hamas, and then to eliminate its leadership and politically destroy it. And then three, to replace it with some kind of entity. Do you think Abbas is going to come in on the back of an Israeli tank? I mean, as bad as what he's already done, I don't think he's going to go that far. So who's going to replace them? No one can say. They don't actually have a plan. I think if anything, if it's Gaza's just left in ruins, a Islamic State-like entity will fill the void, and Israel will be completely fine with that, because Islamic State didn't fight them in Syria. In many ways, supported by them. So catastrophe is on the horizon in the coming hours. I mean, we're already seeing catastrophe, but we're talking about the destruction, the deliberate destruction of hospitals. And we've also seen the oldest church in Gaza City attacked. I mean, is this a Hamas target? Is it a Hamas target to attack an Orthodox church, which has been in this area since 425 AD, also north of Gaza City, where Israel's striking? These are Orthodox priests, Orthodox clergy. This is footage shot by Hind Khodari, who's one of the brave Gaza journalists operating there. We've interviewed her before. I mean, these are people who have no affiliation with Hamas. This is a baby that was killed. But Hamas, they say there is the Islamic State. The Islamic State did not allow Christians to exist within its midst. The St. Porphyrius Church under the Islamic State, which was supported by the U.S. and Israel, it would not have stood under an Islamic State-like entity. And now we see the Jewish state in Israel and the Levant, the self-proclaimed Jewish state, destroy it and declare religious war. And where are the Christian Zionists? Where's John Hagee? They don't even see them as Christians, these born-again, rapture-ready maniacs. They don't see Palestinian Christians as Christians, apparently. These are people who are descended directly from the disciples, but they're not born again in the blood of Christ, so they don't see them as Christians. The conservative incorporated bloviators who've been celebrating this attack, pleasuring themselves in the blood of Palestinian babies on their little podcasts, they have no problem with this, the striking of one of the oldest Christian churches on the planet. Why? Because they're Arabs. I mean, what else? What other reason could there be?
Yeah, it's just pure racism. It's just pure racism. And remember that in recent years, evangelical Christians have become Israel's basically number one base of support, because younger generations of Jews in the U.S. have been increasingly horrified by what Israel has done, which leaves hardcore evangelicals who one day want to see all Jews sacrificed anyway. When Christ returns, and then the older standard Israel lobby that can always be counted on to defend Israeli atrocities. That's basically Israel's coalition right now in the U.S., and that's who's in charge. Even though it's amazing, you know, Biden's proceeding with this plan to arm Israel, even though as polls consistently show that the public is not with him. So this is from Data for Progress. Voters across party lines agree that the U.S. should call for a ceasefire and de-escalation of violence in Gaza. Biden, so committed to the Israeli project, the Israeli atrocities, enabling Israeli massacres, proceeding full head with this request to Congress for tens of billions of dollars. I think the final price tag is over $100 billion. Most of that for Ukraine, but also at least $10 billion for Israel. And that's just the beginning. He's going to ask for more. This is only his first request.
Yeah. So that's amazing, given the level of propaganda that Americans are being subjected to on this. And it shows the complete collapse of trust in legacy media, which has been functioning. If you look at CNN, Fox News, to a slightly lesser extent, MSNBC, which has had Palestinian guests on, the New York Times op-ed section, the editorial board declared that Israel is demonstrating its support, its humanity with its assault on Gaza. The legacy media, so many people have abandoned them. Even the Democratic Party base, from Gen X down to Gen Z. And that's, encouraging. It's sort of paradoxical that the Republican base has abandoned U.S. policy or turned against U.S. policy on Ukraine. And so Biden's speech was obviously meant to bridge the gap between those two bases, his own and the base of Trump.
My interactions with some of these right-wing figures, they're so passionately committed to defending Israel and its atrocities and so blinded by racist contempt for Palestinians that I think they're going to, most of them at least, from what I can tell, are going to drop whatever limited opposition they had to the Ukraine proxy war, because they seem so convinced that Israel needs to wipe out Gaza. They're cheerleading it, whitewashing all these atrocities, all these videos. Like, you could spend all day just watching videos of Palestinian infants being massacred, their parents coming and relatives coming across their bodies. And none of that makes a dent in these people. And it makes sense. It makes perfect sense that Biden will try to tie these two conflicts together, because to the extent there's parallels, we're in Ukraine and Israel, we're talking about ultra-nationalist regimes. We're talking about situations where the U.S. today has blocked all the peaceful options that were on the table that were supported by the international community. And we're talking about blind chauvinism that's devoted to just wiping out your enemy and not living in the same place with them. In the case of the Ukrainian neo-Nazis that the U.S. supports, they don't want to have any, even like a blot of Russian culture inside their country, even though that's the identity of millions of people inside their country. When it comes to Israel, it's just open policy. They're Jewish supremacists. That's the term of B'Tselem, the Israeli Human Rights Group. It's a Jewish supremacist regime, and they cannot tolerate the presence of the indigenous Palestinians, so they have to be wiped out.
Yeah, we're sending billions and billions of dollars to a hyper-militarized ethno-supremacist state led by a Jewish guy. Is it Ukraine or Israel?
Yeah.
I can't tell.
Yeah.
This the racist language is just flowing freely. What's that guy, Dan Bungalow, who's on Rumble?
Mangino.
Mangino. What's his name? Whatever. This Goomba calls Palestinians savages like every day. Just the savages. That's what he refers to them as. And then, you challenged him on that, and he did this this long rant, basically denouncing you because you'd been so good on Russiagate. But then suddenly he realizes. Then he's like, he's with this terrorist simp website, the Gray Zone.
He accused Rashida Tlaib of trying to ignite a religious war inside the U.S. He literally said that because she's calling for a ceasefire. And meanwhile, you have Lindsey Graham openly saying this is a religious war.
This is a religious war.
Yeah. So his own side is saying this is a religious war. And because Rashida Tlaib is calling for a ceasefire, somehow she's responsible for trying to ignite a religious war. But again,
but these frauds, these conservative incorporated frauds, they just can't understand how someone like you could be consistent as an anti-war.
They can't, no.
As an anti-war American, they can't understand. They're like, I thought he was good because he was on Trump's side against Russiagate, but he's not because he's a terror simp.
Yeah.
He's with the savages. It's like they just believe. So, of course, they literally believe in nothing. The Democrats basically believe in nothing. The elected Democrats, they're probably going to be a little more sympathetic to Palestinians on this. And they like to see Palestinians as pure victims. But they're, I mean, Bernie Sanders has been horrible on this. They basically believe in nothing also. And the best thing you can do is form tactical alliances with them on the issues where they're good for purely partisan reasons, like Marjorie Taylor Greene or whoever. But, you know, much of the anti-war left doesn't even want to do that. And so, you know, you're pretty much left with no one. It's been a moment to really showcase the hopelessness of congressional and electoral politics. I guess since we're on this topic, we might as well see what Bernie had to say when he came forward, the voice of moral clarity, who sat there with his mittens on as Biden was elected, his mittens and his mask. And here he is, Matt Duss's puppet.
The mowing down by machine guns of young people who were doing nothing more than attending a dance, the murder of babies. This is an horrific act precipitating a worldwide crisis. And the United States of America, all of us, condemn this act. And in my view, the state of Israel has the absolute right to defend itself against Hamas and terrorism in general. No debate on that.
No debate. Yeah, there's no debate because of you. You're not debating it. And there's no one else left to debate it except Rashida Tlaib, who happens to be Palestinian.
If the terrorism that Israel experiences comes from the fact that it's been occupying millions of people,
yeah,
for more than 50 years, does Israel have the right to defend itself against that terrorism, or does it have the obligation to end the occupation, which is a form of terrorism in itself? And in fact, you can't even compare the terrorism that Hamas was responsible for to the terrorism that Israel was responsible for. And again, it's not morally equivalent because Hamas's terrorism is a response to a criminal occupation and a siege, whereas Israel is the inciting party by occupying and committing state terror, not just in one day, as we saw with Hamas, but over 50 years.
Yeah.
And unless you can have that, unless you can recognize that there's no parity between an occupied people and an occupier, you shouldn't be able to speak on this conflict. It's better just to say nothing. And Bernie, I'm sure he threw in that speech some nods to Gaza's humanitarian situation, which of course few other people in Congress will do, so good for him. But you can't understand this conflict if you adopt any kind of parity between the two sides, because it's very simple. There's an occupier and an occupied population.
Yeah, it's as though history started on October 7th, 2023. It's as though 750,000 Palestinians were not ethnically cleansed between 1947 and 1948, with over 200 villages already destroyed by the time Israel declared its quote-unquote independence in May 1948. It's as if Israel didn't massacre hundreds of Palestinians at Kfar Qassem in 1956 under a curfew, who were Palestinian farmers who were simply returning home from their fields. It's as if Israel didn't massacre 300 people in the Gaza Strip in 1956 during its assault on Egypt, lining men up against the wall and killing them for no reason other than the fact that they were Palestinians. It's as if Israel didn't wipe out three villages, Beit Nuba, Yalu, and Imwas, in Palestine in 1967, driving hundreds of their residents at gunpoint to Ramallah after Israel initiated a two-pronged war against Egypt and Syria. It's as if Israel didn't kill thousands and thousands of Egyptian civilians during the war on attrition during terror attacks, including bombing Egyptian oil facilities. It's as if Israel didn't kill tens of thousands of Lebanese people during its illegal invasion of Lebanon and then occupy Lebanon in a bid to extend Israel's illegal territory all the way up to the Litani River, only being driven out by the armed resistance of Hezbollah in 2000. It's as if Israel didn't carry out Operation Grapes of Wrath and destroy an entire town and UN facility where civilians were sheltering under orders from Naftali Bennett, who is now a top Israeli political figure. It's as though they didn't kill thousands and thousands of Palestinians and destroy the Jenin refugee camp in 2002, as though they didn't blanket Lebanon with high-powered U.S. bombs and JDAMs and in 2006, destroying half of Beirut, the entire Dahiya neighborhood, and much of southern Lebanon. And then they waged five military operations on the Gaza Strip after declaring it after declaring their so-called withdrawal, placing Gaza under siege in 2007, literally counting the calories each resident was entitled to. I mean, all of this history was erased. Tens and tens of thousands of dead, countless atrocities and indignities experienced, and hundreds of Palestinians had been killed in the West Bank already this year.
Yeah.
But a history, according to Bernie Sanders and everyone on Capitol Hill, began on October 7th, and the Gaza Strip wasn't under siege. It was just a regular country that was just sitting there, and they went into Israel just to kill Jews because they like killing Jews. That's the history lesson that we're getting from the best and brightest in the U.S. government, including the self-described democratic socialist Bernie Sanders. And I think those of you who know history, who believe in facts, and actually also believe in humanism and empathy, should this should break from these figures, because they're not only creating space for one of the worst atrocities of our time, they're making us stupid. And that offends me a lot. That's part of what offended me about Zionism in general when I would encounter all the indoctrination, is you're just lying to me, and I'm not stupid, and Jews are not supposed to be stupid. Zionism's trying to make Jews into stupid people who support mass killing.
And chauvinists and supremacists who literally believe in, that we're exceptional, we're the chosen people, all that chauvinistic rhetoric that we get as Jews growing up. And it's sick. And it undermines, I mean, on top of one's, basic humanity, it undermines so much of what is great about Judaism, is critical thinking. There's so many critical thinkers that have come out of, Jewish culture. And all this is geared towards undermining that. There's some article in the New York Times out today that says that progressive Jews feel let down by their left-wing allies. Well, what progressive Jew, who actually takes progressive values seriously, could feel somehow that it's an attack on them that people are outraged over the mass murder of children, the bombing of homes, this ethnic cleansing in their name, and yet they feel let down by left-wing people who are opposed to
that? You're letting me down. Sarah Silverman is so upset. She's not going to make potty mouth jokes anymore. And if you keep supporting the Hamas, like, who are who are they? How are they progressive? Because they support abortion or something? They support abortion rights for American women and post-birth abortions for all Palestinians. Sarah Silverman's sister, Susan Silverman, is a rabbi who lives in a stolen Arab home in the Baqa neighborhood of Jerusalem, which was Arab before it was ethnically cleansed in 1948, just for some context there. But yeah, I don't know who these progressive Jews really are, what makes them progressive. They want to progressively move Palestinians into the Sinai Desert, which is actually the plan. I mean, that as laid out by Danny Ayalon, former Israeli foreign ministry official. But I guess since we're bringing up progressive Jews, like actual progressive Jews, we might as well turn to some of these protests that have really, I think, shaken the world, to see thousands of Jews inside the U.S. calling for a ceasefire and protesting Israeli apartheid. This is a protest held last Wednesday by Jewish Voice for Peace. And, you know, I've been around Jewish Voice for Peace. They definitely speak for me on this issue. Yeah, I might not have a lot in common with their leadership on other things, but they speak for me on this issue. And they've organized Jews in America to be able to voice their conscience on Israel and Zionism. And they are an officially anti-Zionist group that supports the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. And they held the largest protest of Jews against Israeli apartheid ever inside the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday.
That was a beautiful sight. I'm really thankful to everybody who was there for acting on behalf of humanity, and especially on behalf of Jews who refuse to let this murderous Nazi-like government act in our name. And that was a beautiful sight. And I hope stuff like this will continue. It's incredible to me that people still haven't woken up. I mean, we've so many years now to learn the actual facts about Israel, Palestine. It's available for anyone with their eyes minimally open. But a lot of people still choose to not see it. And it's unbelievable that even now in this moment, some people still stand by and either are either silent or support this. But it's good that there are people putting themselves on the line, like Jewish Voice for Peace.
Well, I'll tell you, in Chicago, Rabbi Brant Rosen, I spoke at Yom Kippur services there in 2015 about Gaza, and there were hundreds of Jews. They actually didn't have a synagogue. It was sort of like a charter school, how they don't have space, so they need to like occupy space elsewhere. So they basically rented a church to hold Jewish services in. And, you know, getting to know the people that are around Jewish Voice for Peace, these are people who are serious about Judaism and serious about Jewish culture. And it's difficult in the U.S. to not assimilate. And so one of the things that American Jews have done is take the easy route. It's like you're not that serious about being Jewish. You're struggling with your identity in a multicultural environment. What's the easiest thing to do? Well, there's one pillar of identity that you can easily identify with, and it's just Israel. Go on Birthright and, you know, go volunteer and, you know, give food to Israeli soldiers. And that's all you have to do. And then you can call everyone else a self-hating Jew or an anti-Semite if they won't go along with this sectarian apartheid state's agenda. And yeah, this is falling apart, this concept of Jewish identity. I mean, it's completely falling apart in the United States. And only people who have extremely vulnerable in their identities and are extremely narcissistic, people like Ben Shapiro, are adhering to it without question. I mean, even within liberal mainstream synagogues, it's breaking apart. When I went to Yom Kippur services this year, I just went into some mainstream synagogue in Georgetown. I don't belong to a temple because they're all Zionist in DC. But, you know, I'll still go in and do my thing. And I came in the middle of the sermon, and it was a rabbi who was I knew him as a pro-Israel rabbi. I think he's like the rabbi for the Hillel House at Georgetown University. And he was denouncing the Israeli government as fascist. This was before any of this happened. And he's saying they are fascist and you must go out and protest them. Of course, he was saying go out and protest them for Israel, but because they're destroying Israel. But I mean, it's still significant to see that. So we have that. And then on the world stage, Israel is losing whatever support it might have had, any popular support it might have had. Its support is completely among elites, and it seeks a peace between elites and a peace among the rich. That's what like its normalization with Saudi Arabia is about. So this is at the Rafah border right now, the Rafah crossing, where there are 20 aid trucks being held up by Israel to prevent them from getting in to 2 million people who have no water, no electricity, no fuel, because Israel has cut it off. Women inside the Gaza Strip are now taking pills to prevent themselves from having periods because that which are available because there are no tampons or maxi pads available and they can't take showers. That's just a slight illustration of the humanitarian catastrophe that's unfolding. So Egyptians have come out to protest with the permission of their military junta led by Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who has been a tool, a loyal tool of Israel, and has participated in the siege of Gaza. This is highly significant. And they're pushing towards the border gate. Remember, Egypt has been an active participant in the siege thanks to the Camp David Accords, which eliminated Egypt as a resistance state.
And that figure you mentioned, 20 trucks for 2 million people.
Yeah.
20 trucks for, and this is what Biden was bragging about.
Yeah.
That he got Bibi to agree. Wow. How nice of him to let in 20 trucks.
Yeah, big
for 2 million people. It's unfathomable what a joke this is. I mean, 20 trucks for 2 million people who are starving, who lack water, who lack medicine, who lack everything. And then Biden wants to pin some kind of accomplishment that he gets Israel to agree to 20 trucks. And you're saying that Israel hasn't even allowed that pittance, that less than a pittance, to even come in yet.
No, Antonio Guterres, the UN General Secretary, has gone to the Rafah border and demanded that those trucks be let in, and he too is being ignored. Israel is going as far as it wants with total diplomatic cover from the US, while Biden has claimed that those trucks are going to be allowed in, but Israel's like, well, we're going to bomb them. We will bomb. And they've been bombing. They've bombed twice the Rafah crossing already. Yeah, what if 20 trucks for 2 million people in desperate misery who are relying on whatever stores of water they have, like water bottles and so forth. We don't even know how many people are dying of deprivation. And as the ministries, the health ministry of Gaza comes under attack and hospitals are evacuated and attacked, there will be less and less documentation. And I personally hold responsible not only the Biden administration for this catastrophe, which has been going on for decades, especially since the 2007 siege of Gaza, but I hold the U.S. media responsible. The U.S. corporate media is certainly an enemy of the Palestinian people, and they've started to parachute these CNN reporters into areas where people recognize that as well. Because they've suddenly left their little base in Israel. CNN had sent basically all its anchors to Tel Aviv and Ashkelon. And now they've sent Clarissa Ward, the biggest regime change propagandist, CIA adjacent correspondent, who said that she was once having a seizure because she saw a picture of me in Damascus. And then blocked me. She said she was literally shaking. I'm literally shaking. And she parachutes into Rafah and she finally gets held accountable by an Egyptian podcaster named Ramazan. You're just a puppet. You're just a mouthpiece.
I understand you have your foreign policy. No, I've heard you. You hear me. I understand you have your foreign policy. I understand you speak for your government. I understand you represent your government. But that being said, you're a country that's claimed free speech. Your customized democracy is actually what led to him. And now we are watching an occupation and we are watching the result of your silence, of your misrepresentation of Arabs.
So yeah. That was great. There's a longer video of it, but it's about time that somebody stood up to that demented neocon propagandist. And CNN is also getting it in Ramallah too. People understand that that CNN supplies the background noise for Israel's atrocities. This is Sarah Seidner, who spread
So
she spread the initial propaganda of 40 beheaded babies with citing claims by the Israeli Prime Minister's office as confirmation instead of simply claims.
You are genocide supporters. You are not welcome here. Genocide supporters. CNN.
All right. You see that people are very angry. They do not like the way in which that CNN has been reporting the story. You hear that. But this is, we're fine. But what you are seeing.
So she just kind of robotically continues her report.
The heightened tensions, which is like a stock phrase for every time Israel massacres Palestinians, the heightened tensions in the region. The Palestinians are tense over the fact that they're being butchered and we're whitewashing it. That leads to tensions. Again, another term that implies parity between two sides. So there's tensions between a besieged occupied population and their occupier. And it's hard to say anything is heartening, but any correspondent who whitewashes these atrocities deserves to be confronted about this and told, just given a window into the suffering that they promote and that they cause. Because you're right, they are accomplices. And not that it'll make a difference to their coverage to be called out for it, but at least it's occurring.
And this should happen here. You know, if protest groups are going to go to the site of injustice and mass murder, like the U.S. Capitol or protest outside the White House, then they should go to CNN headquarters in Washington or bring buses to Atlanta, where they have their main headquarters, just as protesters did to the BBC, which has been spreading the usual propaganda. CNN it's just full scale. It's the media wing of the Israeli military at this point. It's just full scale Zionist propaganda.
Well, it helps. And you pointed this out that they have a former AIPAC flunky Wolf Blitzer, literally worked for AIPAC. And
wasn't a flunky. He was an employee.
I mean, he was there. Dana Bash. She's the daughter of a rabbi, right?
Daughter of a rabbi who married Jeremy Bash, her ex-husband, who was the chief of staff for the CIA and Pentagon, whose own father was a rabbi. Then Jake Tapper, he's referred to by Haaretz as the rabbi of primetime media, educated in a Jewish school, recently did a 92nd Street Y talk in New York with Barry Weiss, the neoconservative propagandist who tried to destroy Palestinian professor Joseph Massad during her time at Columbia University on left-wing anti-Semitism. Yes, Jake Tapper, the whiny neocon basset hound, talking about how oppressed Jews in the U.S. are. And now he's just fulminating for a full-on Israeli blitzkrieg and ground assault in Gaza. He cannot contain himself, and they never, ever show any footage from inside Gaza hospitals or anything that would even resemble one of the tens of thousands of atrocities that have occurred in Gaza. They don't spare a second for it on CNN. It's just nonstop interviews with Israeli first responders, reliving October 7th as a new Holocaust again and again and again.
Jake Tapper, speaking to Jake Sullivan the other day, he said that if his child were held hostage right now by Hamas in Gaza, he'd want the U.S. to send in Navy SEALs. It didn't occur to him there's another option if your child is a hostage, is you negotiate for a hostage release, which is what Hamas has been trying to do. There are these Israeli hostages and American hostages inside Gaza. Israel has thousands of Palestinian hostages in their prisons being held without charge or trial. And one of Hamas's goals was to do a prisoner exchange, as has happened before. But Jake Tapper, even in a hypothetical where it's his own kid being held hostage, he claims at least he'd want instead, not for a negotiated release, but for the Navy SEALs to go in and try to free his child. Because again, to these people, all they can see when it comes to Palestinians is violence. That's the only option: violence, force, confrontation.
They want American troops to die for the self-proclaimed Jewish state, which is 5,000 miles away. Yeah. I mean, they're Israel lobbyists.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, I mean, they're there. This is shocking. These are Delta forces, Delta Force troops who are semi-covertly inside Israel. The White House tweeted this photo. In Israel, President Biden met with first responders. These are not first responders. This is Delta Force. Then they deleted the photo an hour later. Why? Because you're not supposed to show the faces of these semi-covert teams. Why is Delta Force, you know, the group that the U.S. sent into Colombia to kill Pablo Escobar, which actually intensified the drug-related violence in that country and spread the drug trade? Why are they there? Are they, do they think they're going to parachute them into the Gaza Strip and rescue Americans and kill the Palestinians like it's some Cold War era Chuck Norris movie so that Jake Tapper can cry Basset Hound neocon tears? Like, is that what they're thinking? Because it's not going to work out.
You know, Max, since you mentioned something being deleted, this photo of these Delta Force operatives being deleted, here's something else that was deleted. This was from an Associated Press article citing U.S. officials. And these two paragraphs got deleted from the article. But here they are. Four U.S. officials said American diplomats became increasingly alarmed by comments from their Israeli counterparts regarding their intention to deny water, food, medicine, electricity, and fuel into Gaza, as well as the inevitability of civilian casualties. The officials spoke on condition of anonymity. Members of the Israeli security political establishment told U.S. diplomats that the eradication of Hamas would require methods used in the defeat of the Axis powers in World War II. One official said he and others were told by Israeli counterparts that, quote, a lot of innocent Germans died in World War II and were reminded of Japanese civilian deaths from the U.S. atomic bombs. Israeli officials have publicly made similar comparisons. So this is Israel telling the Biden administration that they plan on adopting World War II level tactics, so which entailed firebombing and even dropping nuclear bombs on cities. And that's the plan, according to these officials. And somehow, for some reason, the Associated Press deleted these two paragraphs from that report.
Yeah, so they're talking about Dresden in order to appeal to the Western public. And this is, we've heard this language, these are talking points being spread through the Israeli foreign ministry. We've heard this publicly, that we've heard it from Tzipi Hotovelli, the settler fanatic Israeli ambassador to the UK, and we've heard it from Naftali Bennett. We'll play some video of him at first, but understand what Dresden was. Dresden was carried out under the watch of Curtis LeMay, Bombs Away LeMay, head of the U.S. Air Force, with Robert McNamara, defense secretary, I think, employing complex mathematical formulas for the first time to determine how to maximize civilian casualties in order to bring the Axis powers to the negotiating table to surrender. And that was also part of the firebombing of Tokyo, the logic for the firebombing of Tokyo, and ultimately the nuclear bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So some of the worst atrocities ever. And in Dresden, official estimates had like 35,000 to 100,000 dead. Some later estimates had it at 25,000. But this is what Dresden looked like in 1945 in February. Operation Gomorrah is what it was called, I believe. And basically, they dropped incendiary bombs on this city, which dated back to, I think, the 16th century. It had a lot of wood buildings, just like the paper-thin buildings of Tokyo. They set on fire very easily, and the whole place went up in flames. And that is what Israel is openly proposing for the Gaza Strip. And it already kind of, it's already halfway there.
Yeah.
Here's Naftali Bennett, who kind of looks like for a lot of women, this might look like a FaceTime call with your abusive ex-husband. But here he is spreading the talking point of a firebombing of Gaza.
and again, you
absolutely use the Palestinian narrative. You are incorrect.
They are responsible, because I can tell you that when the UK,
absolutely
when Great Britain was fighting the Nazis during World War II, no one asked what's going on in Dresden. It was the Nazis targeting London, and you targeted Dresden. So listen, shame on you if you go on with that false narrative.
We're not talking about that. And that, and in hindsight, many people have listened. And in hindsight, many people have readdressed that kind of carpet bombing.
Oh, I see. Now you're Mr. Clean. Shame on you.
Whoa. Well, yeah, I mean, so there's the Dresden talking point. And we are now at, I think, over 4,000 dead in the Gaza Strip. And Gaza's health ministry has announced some 1,400 missing. Many people are still under the rubble. We're hearing from our contacts in Gaza that Gaza City smells like death. This may be from rotting meat. When I was in Shujaiya, the whole area smelled like rotten meat because of all of the butchers, like the butcher shops that have been blown up. But there's also the smell of rotting human carcasses. And you really can't tell the difference when you're there.
And the toll of children, according to the last update I saw from Defense for Children in Palestine, is 1,661 children in Gaza. There's so many videos you can go online and just watch if you have.
Yeah, I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, it's just, it's unbelievable.
I started having, you know, walking nightmares after watching so many of these videos. You know, you scroll through various feeds to get news and one of them comes up and you have to kind of stop looking. Or if you're Ben Shapiro, it actually stimulates your libido, your weird libido, as you inhale a helium balloon.
And meanwhile, Hamas has just released two American captives. They got nothing in return, as far as I can tell, or maybe they did and it's not public, but the point is they did it, which shows that there is a potential, if the US and Israel wanted it, to negotiate for the release of these people. But that's not on the agenda. As the Israeli government has made clear, as the Biden administration has made clear, the plan is to eradicate Gaza, to further ethnically cleanse it, kill, you know, untold numbers of more people. And, you know, Max, I personally was skeptical that Israel was going to launch a ground invasion, because my understanding of them is that they, you know, as you've talked about, they did take a lot of casualties last time they tried in Gaza in 2014. And they're fighting a highly motivated, highly prepared insurgency that's been preparing for this. And they have a cowardly way of fighting war. They have all the weapons of war in the world. They can bomb this defenseless civilian population from the sky, face no resistance. But it looks like at least a ground invasion still is quite possible.
Yeah.
I can't rule it out, but despite what I thought would happen, it seems, you know, Netanyahu was there rallying the troops near the front lines the other day. And that seems to be the plan.
Yeah. There are many reasons why ground invasion is likely, but we have to wonder why it's taken this long, for one to actually be declared. And that has to do partly with the Hezbollah effect. Hezbollah has waged 15 operations on Israel's northern frontier. It's taken out several Merkava tanks and other Israeli targets with anti-tank guided missiles, and Israel has not responded, because the consequence of responding would be the evacuation of much of Israel's north, including the occupied Golan, but all the way down to Haifa. Tel Aviv might also come under intense fire. This would be existential. And Hezbollah seemingly warned Israel about a ground invasion. At the same time, Yoav Gallant, the Israeli defense minister, has told Israeli troops that they would see the inside of Gaza soon. And you have to understand, Israel's military is not, it could be a professional military, but it's not. It is sort of a civilian military force that is the main mechanism for the indoctrination of the Israeli public into the hyper-militarized and nationalistic mentality that prevails, particularly among younger Jewish Israelis. And so basically Gallant is saying, you, Israeli society, will have the opportunity to participate in a blood vengeance rampage against the people of Gaza for what they did to us on October 7th. And the forces amassed at the border, many of them are reservists who are called out of regular jobs to go on this rampage. So there's not necessarily a plan there.
You've been listening to another episode of Gray Zone Radio. To watch the full live stream, subscribe on YouTube. You can find the link at thegrayzone.com. That's thegrayzone.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Telegram. You can also subscribe to the Max Blumenthal podcast. Thanks for joining us for another episode. We'll see you again next week. I've been your co-host, Christopher Weaver.
My name is Leon. I've come up listening to KPFK. It's wonderful. I really got into it with Roy's show, Midnight to Six, Roy of Hollywood. Learned so much. It's an education. Just wonderful. It's one of the dangers of KPFK. When you turn it on, if you're into it, there's nothing else going to go on. But, yeah, this is just a great place. Loads and loads of stuff. And no matter what you want, it's here. And I wouldn't be myself without it. I mean, I've got KPFK in my blood.
KPFK, listener supported, 99% approved.
This is Joni Mitchell, and you are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles and 98.7 FM Santa Barbara.
Help me, I think I'm falling in love again.
This radio station, KPFK, is now over 64 years old and has persisted in fulfilling its mission as an independent, non-commercial community radio institution. In those 64 years, KPFK has provided rich media opportunities for many to participate and contribute to a lasting understanding between nations and between the individuals of all nations, races, creeds, and colors. KPFK's work is carried on by each new generation of radio practitioners and listener sponsors, and they are aware that at the end of the day, no one person or group is more important to KPFK than the institution itself. And KPFK will not succumb to any one crisis or challenge. We've weathered many storms over the years, and with your help, we'll continue well into the future. Please, ensure KPFK's longevity by making your pledge now at kpfk.org/donate or call 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. Thank you.
Support comes from UCLA's Center for the Art of Performance, presenting Pat Metheny on Sunday, October 29th at Royce Hall. A versatile and accomplished musician, Metheny has won 20 Grammys in 12 different categories throughout a prolific career that spawned 50 recordings. But then he returns to Royce Hall for his solo tour. For tickets, visit cap.ucla.edu and kpfk.org.
Hey, this is Wanda Sykes, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. And if you'd like to shell out a few bucks, you know, keep us up and running so I can have nice conversation in a cool voice like this. Pick up the phone and call 818-985-5735.